Attention campers, the new Camp Snoopy at Kings Island brings your family summer camp fun all season long. Head to Camp Snoopy with Charlie Brown and the whole Peanuts gang for fun and adventure. Race forwards and backwards on the new family boomerang coaster, Snoopy Soapbox Racers. Explore on your own with more space to roam at Beagle Scout Acres. And don't forget to grab a snack at Pigpen's Mess Hall. It's a new way to play with the Peanuts gang at Camp Snoopy. Now open, only at Kings Island, for the fun of it.
Your industry is unique. It faces its own challenges and risks that set it apart. That means choosing just any insurance company just won't cut it. At The Hartford, we take pride in knowing the ins and outs of your industry and help provide solutions that suit how you do business, from liability and property insurance to workers' comp and more. At The Hartford, we don't just talk about specialization, we live it. Learn how The Hartford can help your business at thehartford.com.
This is Bloomberg Business Week. Insight from the reporters and editors who bring you America's most trusted business magazine.
Plus, global business, finance, and tech news.
The Bloomberg Business Week podcast with Carol Messer and Tim Stenebeck from Bloomberg Radio.
And we're also keeping track of some activity in Lower Manhattan. This has to do with jury selection beginning in the case against Sam Bankman-Fried. And outside Manhattan Federal Courthouse in downtown New York is Bloomberg Sound On and Bloomberg Crypto co-host Kaylee Lines. We also welcome with us Bloomberg News editor Tom Maloney, who's here in our Bloomberg Interactive Broker studio, and a great read and write on the Bloomberg Terminal about SBF and FTX. Kaylee, I want to start with you. Set the mood, set the scene. What has gone on so far? Far in downtown New York?
Well, so far, it's just been jury selection. There's been a number of jurors who have been ruled out of the juror pool because they've been vetted and either had conflicts. One said that he already had a preconceived negative feeling about crypto. So that's really the process that is underway today, trying to put this jury together. That process could include until early tomorrow. And then we will enter the arguments phase of the trial. Prosecutors will make their case on these allegations that Sam Bankman-Fried perpetrated one of the greatest financial frauds in U.S. history, that he misused customer funds, commingled them between FTX, the exchange he ran, and Alameda, his hedge fund that he founded that he said was operating separately from FTX. And prosecutors will allege that essentially this scheme allowed him to use customer funds to make risky investments, invest in real estate. Ultimately, the proceeds of this fraud were able to power his political donations. That's all what the prosecution will say. But of course, the defense will say that this was not intentional. He did not intentionally commit fraud. This is something Bankman-Fried himself has said repeatedly leading up to this trial. And we should note he has pleaded not guilty to all seven of the charges he is facing.
Yeah, Kaylee, can you talk about the expected duration of this trial and then what the penalties could be for SBF if he is found guilty?
Well, it's going to be a long process. This trial could take up to 6 weeks. So this really is just the very beginning. There's going to be several weeks of both the prosecution and the defense making their cases. But if at the end he is found guilty of one or all of the charges he's facing, he could potentially, if given the maximum sentence, spend the rest of his life in prison. Five of the counts that he is facing come with a maximum sentence of 20 years. So if found guilty on all charges and you add it all together, he very well could be looking at a sentence of 100 years plus.
Tom, it may be a long duration, and that's all interesting, but it's like the details that will ultimately come out, because there are some really interesting witnesses in all of this who have already pled guilty.
Yeah, absolutely. You have he's kind of on again, off again girlfriend, Caroline Ellison. I think she has pled guilty. You have his I think he was co-CEO Ryan Salami.
Mm-hmm.
So there's going to be some very interesting witnesses for sure. Gary Wang, his childhood best friend, right? And one of the sort of technical people at FTX, I think his testimony is going to be critical in terms of how much Bankman-Fried knew about what was actually going on in the code and all of the kind of backdoor stuff that was going on at FTX.
Before we go back to Kaylee, I mean, as you guys laid out on the terminal, a great read through of like kind of from start to finish, we're not actually finished, but from the rise to the fall of SBF, what strikes you most as we go through this process?
You know, look, I think looking back, what's most surprising, and we were chatting about this before, is how many red flags people were kind of ignoring or even sort of celebrating in this guy, you know, back in 2022 when his net worth peaked. You know, people were investing in him and looking at him as a real kind of savant. You know, he was talking to investors while playing video games, doing interviews while playing video games, just, you know, kind of getting in and talking to as many journalists as he could, and really things that, you know, in hindsight look like pretty unusual behavior, but at the time were sort of seen as, you know, this guy's different, this guy's obviously a genius because he is kind of strange.
We've seen it before, mm-hmm. right? We've seen investor money, especially on the West Coast, roll into people who are just a little bit different because it sounds like maybe they figured something out.
Yeah, Kaylee, I mean, I guess he sort of had this almost, at least at some points, cocky persona before this really came about. I mean, do we know anything about what SBF's state of mind or is going into this trial, what the people
what
around him are saying?
Like?
Yeah.
Well, we do know based on his appearance at the courthouse today, granted cameras can't be in the room, so we don't actually have photos or videos we can show, we just have sketches. He cut the hair. Remember, he's been really well known for this wild mop of curly hair that he has. That is now short. He is wearing a suit that by all appearances looks too big for him. It looks like he may have lost a certain substantial amount of weight while he has been in jail in Brooklyn, because of course he, while was on a house arrest at his parents' house in California, was found by a judge to be trying to tamper with witnesses, so he got put into this detention facility, has been there for 2 months despite repeated attempts by his defense team to try to get him out of it. And there's been a lot of complaints about the food that he isn't able to eat, that he's basically been subsisting of bread and water and some peanut butter. And so in theory, maybe that is all weighing on his state of mind, but the reporting we have from inside the courthouse at this time is, to this point, he's sitting there pretty calmly taking notes on a computer that isn't connected to the internet. And so far, seems, you know, relatively sanguine about the whole thing, but of course we'll have to see how things change as the trial plays out.
God, Tom, I do feel like when, you know, in terms of what might come out in the courtroom is just what SBF knew, what were his responsibilities ultimately, and I also thought it was interesting in the story that you guys have out on the terminal about SBF maybe arguing that lawyers at FTX were involved in key business decisions and he acted in good faith. So it's just interesting maybe the different strategies he may ultimately take to fight this one.
Yeah, and I think one of the really interesting things that came out in the past couple of weeks was that great story we had at Bloomberg about his relationship with his parents. You know, his dad was one of those lawyers who was often in the room in those negotiations. So how does that kind of come out in the trial, I think, will be really interesting.
Kaylee, do we know if he'll testify in his own defense?
Well, this is going to be one of the major questions, is whether Sam Bankman-Fried is going to testify himself. He has been kind of an unusual white-collar crime defendant in that he's been very vocal. He's spoken about this in media. He has kind of tried to make his own case in the public rather than having his defense attorneys speak for him. So it'll be interesting to see if he does take the stand. He was asked in court earlier if he understood that he cannot be compelled to testify. He said yes, but we're kind of going to have to wait and see on that one. It would certainly be unusual if he, as a white-collar crime defendant, did decide to testify on his own behalf, but there's a lot that's unusual about this case.
No, nothing unusual, Kaylee. Nothing at all. It's been pretty remarkable. All right, Kaylee Lyons, so appreciate your insight and what you're seeing. And Tom, thank you so much as well. Bloomberg News editor Tom Maloney, I highly recommend you check out the reporting on SBF on the terminal, and we'll be checking in with Kaylee throughout the day. Of course, co-host of Bloomberg Crypto and Bloomberg Sound on as well.
You're listening to the Bloomberg Business Week podcast. Catch us live weekday afternoons from 3 to 6 Eastern. Listen on Bloomberg.com, the iHeartRadio app, and the Bloomberg Business app. Or watch us live on YouTube.
All right, I'm so grateful when we have a voice that has seen a lot of cycles on Wall Street, has seen different trends on Wall Street, has seen different cycles in our government, and has to make sense of it. He is really has a front seat to what has been going on when it comes to private credit and private lending. So delighted to have back with us Ken Kinsell, President and CEO at Churchill Asset Management, $47 billion private capital affiliate of Nuveen. Nuveen, you know, the more than $1 trillion asset manager of the Teachers Insurance and Annuity Association of America. Ken is joining us on Zoom from the Greenwich Economic Forum in Greenwich, Connecticut. Ken, so great to have you back with us. How are you?
Great, great. Great to speak with you again, Carol, and always enjoy our conversation.
I do, too. I feel like I always learn a lot. You give me some great perspective. You give our listeners and viewers great perspective. So what we were talking about with our TV colleagues is, how much does an investment professional like you and your investors, how much do they care about dysfunction, lack thereof, a House Speaker maybe being voted out in Washington?
Well, certainly uncertainty is generally not a good thing. And certainly we've had a lot of that over the last year. The current environment that we've been, you know, living through has, you know, certainly created a very challenging dynamic overall. And of course, the banking turmoil in the spring, and of course, now some of the dynamics playing out in Washington. But I would say that out of those dynamics has come one of the most attractive opportunities that I've certainly seen in my career in direct lending, in private credit. So I guess in that sense, I never wanted to wish for dysfunction and uncertainty. But I will say that in many respects, you know, private credit and direct lending, you know, unlike the GFC, Carol, mm-hmm. you know, has been here, if you will, to kind of come to the rescue a bit by providing the financing capital and lending capital and ultimately growth capital to the companies that need that capital and have, you know, done and have performed well through the current environment. So in that sense, we're super busy and hoping that if things settle down a bit, we were certainly hoping for that post-Labor Day that, you know, we'd get even busier.
Well, interesting that you talk about private credit like this, because Bank of America actually put out a note. They said that private debt defaults are going to reach 5% by early 2024, because a lot of deals, one third of deals, come due in the next 2.5 years. Is that bad for private credit, though?
Well, first of all, I'm not sure I agree with those numbers. The reality is if you look at our portfolio, or the portfolio of any number of, you know, what are arguably high quality, you know, top tier, you know, private credit managers, you know, some of which are publicly traded, I think what you would see is generally portfolios have held up extremely well. So, you know, I think that the prediction that default rates would reach 5% is not supported by what we're seeing today. Now that doesn't mean that it won't play out, but I would say that just because there's a maturity wall doesn't necessarily mean that those companies are going to ultimately default. I mean, I think what you may very well see, and you're already seeing it today, is that, you know, a lot of those companies are going back to their lenders and saying, look, this is a good business. It has strong cash flow. It's performed well. And we need to extend. And frankly, the reality is that to the extent that the businesses have performed, the odds are very good that they can work something out with their lenders and extend the maturity. So I wouldn't necessarily equate maturities to defaults, because, you know, as a direct lender, as a private credit lender, you know, we have the ability to sit down with a company and if it's private equity owned, with the private equity or the owner, and work out the dynamics if in fact those need to be done. Now, it's a totally different story if the company is performing poorly or underperforming it, or, you know, is otherwise not able to make its payments. But I would not attribute just maturity to necessarily creating that problem. And certainly we are not seeing evidence of that today. So,
right.
You know, it'll be interesting to see how that plays out.
Ken, right. Defaults can tell one story, and you're saying you're not necessarily seeing that. But in terms of rewriting terms and working with your borrowers, are you doing a lot more of that in this environment?
Frankly, not right now. I would tell you that our portfolio today, so we have investments in over 500 U.S. mid-market companies in areas like healthcare and software and business services. These are all backed or owned by private equity investment firms, which is largely the case for many of our peers. And I think, you know, I've certainly had an opportunity to talk to my peers here in Greenwich Economic Forum. A number of them are here. Mm-hmm. We trade notes, and I can tell you that our portfolios overall are holding up quite well. So, you know, our quote unquote workout person is frankly not that busy, surprisingly, I think, to some. And our new deal people, you know, the folks that are underwriting new transactions, are actually quite busy. In fact, we had a record quarter for a third quarter last quarter. And, you know, to the extent that, you know, we do get some clarity regarding the dynamics in and around interest rates and maybe a bit more certainty regarding potential increases in interest rates and inflation. Mm-hmm. You know, I think we could very well find ourselves in a relatively soft landing. And if we do, you know, I think we'll see M&A activity and transaction activity pick up, right? Because, I mean, it's really, you know, the markets are really waiting for some stability regarding rates. So I'm not, you know, I would say in what obviously has been a tough day in the markets, I would say what you'll hear from me is that, you know, there's a lot of liquidity in private credit. Institutional investors are allocating significantly to the space. Yields, obviously, conditions are quite attractive right now. And we're busy, you know, so, you know, I hate to be the positive story here, but I will say, you know, we're busy and institutions are allocating for sure.
Well, Roman Bostic just said, Carol, you're the optimist always in all of this stuff. I do see the glass half full, but I want to make sure I'm eyes wide open. So I do wonder where you are seeing any cracks, because I do wonder in this higher rate environment, and we are going to be higher for longer. There's going to be some problems. We know that. So where are you seeing cracks?
No, absolutely. And I would say that, you know, in many respects, this is the kind of period where, you know, the lenders that maybe were a bit more aggressive and looked really good, you know, and getting higher returns, but maybe taking on more risk, I think are those dynamics are coming home to roost. But I would say overall, yes. And I would say that where we see cracks, if you will, and they're, you know, certainly in our portfolio, there are not many, but where we see them, they're very episodic and they're not tied to a broad, you know, pullback in economic conditions. So for example, you know, a deal that was done a year ago where, you know, they embarked upon an acquisition strategy and those acquisitions did not play out as expected, or where there was a fundamental premise regarding healthcare reimbursement rates and some shifts in the way that they oriented the business that maybe didn't play out as well. So there are certainly situations that have not gone as well as planned, but not a fundamental pullback of the type that we would have seen, for example, in the GFC in any way, shape, or form. So,
Can I ask one last question? Because we're running out of time. I wish, you know, when I speak with you, I always want like an hour. 30 seconds quick, because we keep talking about, you know, treasury levels, pick your duration back to levels of 2007, 2008. Anything today reminds you of the great financial crisis? Very quickly, like 30 seconds.
Yeah. So I would say the pullback in the syndicated loan markets in many respects is a carbon copy in that sense, right? So CLO markets go dormant, liquid loan markets go dormant, no real activity in the underwritten large cap in the syndicated loan market. The difference this time, direct lending is there, lots of liquidity, lending capital to really go and support private equity. So similar in the liquid markets, but different in the sense that there are direct lenders there now to provide that capital.
Well, certainly a highlight of our day. Ken, be well. Ken Kinsell, President and CEO at Churchill Asset Management, joining us from the Greenwich Economic Forum in Greenwich. Many people argue that these private credit guys is why the regional banking crisis maybe wasn't so bad earlier this year. Carol Masser, Simone Foxman, this is Bloomberg Radio.
Attention campers, the new Camp Snoopy at Kings Island brings your family summer camp fun all season long. Head to Camp Snoopy with Charlie Brown and the whole Peanuts gang for fun and adventure. Race forwards and backwards on the new family boomerang coaster, Snoopy Soapbox Racers. Explore on your own with more space to roam at Beagle Scout Acres. And don't forget to grab a snack at Pigpen's Mess Hall. It's a new way to play with the Peanuts gang at Camp Snoopy. Now open, only at Kings Island, for the fun of it.
Johann Schmiegel, you've got the world's highest IQ.
Yes, 247.
Wow, did you know that thanks to Salesforce with Einstein AI, everyone's smarter? Now everyone's an Einstein, just like you.
But I'm the smartest.
Not anymore. With connected data and trusted AI, everyone can give customers experiences they've only dreamed of. Oh, look, here's a few Einsteins now.
Hey, hi.
Hola, amigo.
Everyone's an Einstein?
It's okay, Johann, let it happen. The number one AI CRM. Now everyone's an Einstein with Salesforce.
You're listening to the Bloomberg Business Week podcast. Catch us live weekday afternoons from 3 to 6 Eastern on Bloomberg Radio, the Bloomberg Business app, and YouTube. You can also listen live on Amazon Alexa from our flagship New York station. Just say, Alexa, play Bloomberg 1130.
I'm driving in my car. I turn on the radio.
Yeah, how about you let me drive?
Oh, no, 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 no.
Who's gonna drive you home?
Honey, please, I'll do the driving.
Drive on.
Excuse me, I wanna drive. You drive
me crazy. It's the question that drives us. You drive me
crazy. This is the Drive to the Close.
That funky music will drive us till the dawn.
On Bloomberg Radio.
All right, everybody, just about 17 and a half minutes to be exact until the closing bell rings on this Tuesday, October 3rd. This is one of those days, Simone, Carol Masser, along with Simone Foxman, Simone in for my co-host Tim Stanovec. But Simone, it's one of those days where I don't have enough screens on the Bloomberg because there's just SBF, there's DC, there's the market, there's a lot going on.
I've got two big screens and they are crazy right now. Watching for McCarthy headlines, watching right. for Sam Bankman-Fried, and also watching the Fed. I mean, we'll see.
Yeah, right. All the Fed speak and chatter. So let's get to it. Let's see what our next guest has to say. He's got to keep a watch, certainly, on the trade and the markets. Joining us once again is Aaron Kennan. He is co-founder and chief executive officer of Clear Harbor Asset Management. Clear Harbor Asset Management. They've got over $1 billion in assets under management, and he is joining us once again on Zoom from Stamford, Connecticut. I'm rushing to get to you because I feel like there's a lot to talk about. Aaron, good to have you back. Hope you're well. I got to start with the DC news and what's going on in terms of the U.S. House Speaker Kevin McCarthy. Got to ask, how does it factor in to how you think about the investment climate or what's going on more broadly? Does it affect decision making at all?
Well, Carol, thanks for having me back.
Yeah.
It certainly doesn't instill confidence in markets at a time when markets seem to be lacking sort of clear footing on the way forward. You know, we've been a country that has really advanced due to, you know, finding compromise and common ground, you know, from Benjamin Franklin to the present. That's how we have moved the ball down the field for the American people. And to see what's happening in Congress, not just today, but generally sort of general strife and polarization on key issues, whether it's the deficit and how that may impact treasuries or the border and how that impacts even the health of our children. So it's sort of a sad moment, in my opinion.
Do you see that having any impact on the market?
Well, certainly I think that there have been incremental shifts occurring. This is just one of them in the sort of slow fracturing of sort of the foundation of faith that America is a force that can be relied upon. And I'm a big patriot, but I think if you look at sort of our country over the last 50 years, you know, sort of pre-fall of the Berlin Wall, we were very much a bipolar world, and post Berlin Wall falling, we were really the sole superpower. And today, we have multiple forces at work, you know, whether it's the war in Ukraine and Russia, but also the strife between China and the US, and how key economies in the world, like India, are sort of functioning in a way that maybe they hadn't thought of before. It changes the way trade occurs. It changes the way the currency in which trade is taking place. You know, China can sell product in rupees to India. India can buy oil from Russia in rupees today, just as an example. And that on the margin can have a negative impact on the need for these economies, these countries, to hold those reserves in U.S. dollars, which is just one incremental point of pressure perhaps occurring here in the U.S. Treasury market. So that's a very long-winded way, Simone, of me saying yes.
No, but it's relevant and it makes sense within this environment, Aaron. So having said that, you can, right, suggest to your investors to invest anywhere in the world. So is it time to increasingly look outside the United States in your view?
Well, I think that, you know, the diversification is one of the last free lunches, as they say, in investing. And certainly there are opportunities both here in the United States and abroad. And the regulatory environment here historically has been very strong. Our laws are very strong for owners of capital. And so that has been one principal reason why there's been a natural tendency to want to overweight the United States on a go-forward basis. Not to mention that we tend to consume in dollars and these companies are trade in dollars. And so you know, with that said, we see opportunities in Europe. We see opportunities in South America and in Asia, particularly in Japan right now. We think that there's an interesting shift in sentiment and regulatory environment in Japan, where investors are essentially forcing companies to think about return on invested capital, return on equity, you know, buybacks, mergers and acquisitions. If you want to stay listed on the topics, they're sort of nudging companies to think of these new variables. So there are opportunities everywhere, and it's not just equities right now. In fact, with the rise of interest rates, particularly treasuries are really competing in a way with equities they haven't in such a long time, perhaps in the last 15, 20 years, where real rates on the 10-year treasury, just as an example, with 10-year treasuries at 4.8% today and the 10-year break-even inflation at 2.35%, which is quite low, you know, we haven't seen the difference between those two numbers, 2.45%. We haven't seen that in about 20 years or so. And so, yes, it feels like we're catching a falling knife when we're buying treasuries today in this market where the long bond's down 2%, but certainly look a lot more attractive today than they have in a long time.
So where do you put your incremental dollar right now?
Well, that's one area. You know, it's thinking about our targets. We think that the high-grade mortgage-backed securities, U.S. agency mortgage-backed securities and U.S. treasuries are an interesting place to think about allocating, whether it's incremental fixed income dollars or dollars from the sideline, or possibly, depending on the mandate, of course, dollars even from the equity asset class. We still believe in equities for the long run here at Clear Harbor. It's central to how we think about investing for many of our families, many of our non-for-profit organizations that we manage capital for. But we do think, you know, also therefore moving out the duration curve. Yes, treasury bills are really attractive at 5.4, 5.5%. But now you can buy a 10-year at 4.80, a 20-year at about, what was it today? I'm looking at the Bloomberg screen at 5.13. Mm-hmm. We haven't seen this sort of environment for a long time, and we think it's worthy of nudging further out the curve. The Bloomberg Aggregate Bond Index, the primary benchmark, has an average maturity of about 8.5 years. You don't have to go to 8.5 years, but if you're at 2 now, I recommend moving out to 3 or 4. If you're at 3, move out to 4 or 5. So that's sort of how we're thinking about it. Incremental moves, not major tactical shifts.
Yeah, no, we talk about that, right? You know, if you think about equity versus the fixed income can give you certainly returns and kind of lock it in with less risk, especially when there's a lot of questions going forward. Hey, Aaron, thank you. Aaron Kennan, co-founder, CEO at Clear Harbor Asset Management.
This is the Bloomberg Business Week podcast.
Available on Apple, Spotify, and anywhere else you get your podcasts.
Listen live weekday afternoons from 3 to 6 Eastern.
On Bloomberg.com, the iHeartRadio app, TuneIn, and the Bloomberg Business app.
You can also watch us live every weekday on YouTube and always on the Bloomberg Terminal.
Attention campers, the new Camp Snoopy at Kings Island brings your family summer camp fun all season long. Head to Camp Snoopy with Charlie Brown and the whole Peanuts gang for fun and adventure. Race forwards and backwards on the new family boomerang coaster, Snoopy Soapbox Racers. Explore on your own with more space to roam at Beagle Scout Acres. And don't forget to grab a snack at Pigpen's Mess Hall. It's a new way to play with the Peanuts gang at Camp Snoopy. Now open, only at Kings Island, for the fun of it.
Your industry is unique. It faces its own challenges and risks that set it apart. That means choosing just any insurance company just won't cut it. At The Hartford, we take pride in knowing the ins and outs of your industry and help provide solutions that suit how you do business, from liability and property insurance to workers' comp and more. At The Hartford, we don't just talk about specialization, we live it. Learn how The Hartford can help your business at thehartford.com.